If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Yo, what the heck is going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Kinda Funny XCast, your home for all things Xbox here at Kinda Funny. Of course, I'm one of your hosts, Snowbike Mike, and today I am joined by just one of my gaming dads, Mr. Paris Lilly, back on the set after our big interview with one Phil Spencer. Of course, we're going to be talking about that because we took a week off afterwards, but we haven't been back since the Phil interview. So, Paris, let's check in first off. How are you? And, of course, congratulations on a great show, my friend.
No, congratulations to you, Mike, for being an awesome host on that episode. I knew it couldn't have been easy, but, you know, I think we did the best that we could. But no, I'm good. Obviously, we had the extended break here, you know, between that episode and now. A lot has happened since then. It's been interesting, you know, watching what's going across the gaming landscape over the past couple of weeks. But doing good. My Lakers not doing as good as I would hope they would be doing right now. But oh my God.
Nothing's going to stop that man from shooting threes.
I was losing my mind on that. But I did get to see the closeout game in person, game six against the Golden State Warriors. And my son and I had an awesome time. And his team lost and mine didn't. So at least I have that. He did not talk to me the entire ride.
I loved that photo of you wearing the Lakers jersey and your son rocking the Golden State jersey. Yeah. What a great photo. Just family having fun at the game. And that's so awesome. And of course, yeah, our names were in the news a lot this past couple of weeks, thanks to our interview. But you know, someone's name is always in the news, and that's Mr. Jeff Grubb. Jeff Grubb, you are the coolest dude in video games. You are one of the awesome many that I get to hang out with and call a friend. Of course, I'm pleased to have you on the show. How are you today, Jeff?
I'm fantastic, so I'm with you boys. Listen, you only got one gaming dad here, but I would like to apply for the job, all right, yes. Mike? Yes. Get me in there. Let me be daddy, all right?
You can be my third gaming daddy. I love that, Jeff.
Hell yes.
Anytime. Jeff, of course, me and Paris. I know Paris's name has been in the headlines before, but it was kind of my first time where the spotlight was put on the podcast.
How did it feel?
It was fun. It was overwhelming. It was wild. You know, my birthday was just 3 days later. So I was like, oh man, I got to run away and hide for my birthday. But it was really cool, Jeff. And it was awesome to get to share that experience with, of course, Paris and Gary and Barrett here on the team and, you know, kind of say, oh wow, that was a special moment. And of course, it wasn't the best moment for Xbox, but it was a real moment. And I think we got something special out of Phil. And I think the community really enjoyed that. And of course, took a lot from that. But that's what I want to talk with you about before we kick off the show. Is like, what is that feeling like for you, Jeff Grubb? Of course, you have been someone who has shared a lot of insider news before. You've been out there before. Your name is always in headlines. What's that like for you? Is that a pressure on you, or have you just come to accept it and understand it?
It's a pressure. I won't pretend like I don't do it to myself. Like I absolutely do it to myself. It's one of those things where, you know, that Dale Carnegie thing, the most beautiful word in the English language to everybody is their own name. So that definitely drives a lot of that stuff. I think in a deep down level where I'm just like, oh yeah, of course I like it when people are talking, about the stuff that I'm reporting. But immediately after that, when it's like in that waiting phase of I've reported something and now there's all this room for skepticism and for things to change and for all this other stuff to happen, that's all just pressure. And that all most of the time feels kind of rough. That's especially true when it's something like that Hi-Fi Rush story where it's like, this is something most people don't actually want to hear. They don't want to hear this specific thing because it's, slightly bad news maybe about a game they either really like. And Microsoft is going to kind of take a position where they're like, well, it's not exactly true, even though it's definitely true. But it's still something like, okay, so I'm reporting this. And not only is it not like a fun, oh, Jeff Grubb said this, everyone's kind of mad at me. And it's like, okay, well, that's part of the job too. And you just have to accept it. So the real key to most of this is You got to take the highs and the lows in the same exact way, which is kind of don't take them at all. Let it all happen over there. When the day's over, walk away from the computer, go actually touch grass, go outside, take a walk, spend time with the family. And that's been something, a learned lesson over time that I've been able to apply, and it's helped out a lot.
Wise words right there from you, Jeff Grubb. I really like that. And we're going to talk about that kind of words being misconstrued and where that goes after you break that news, right? We definitely had that with, of course, Phil in the Xbox community. And we're going to talk about that at the beginning of this podcast. But Paris, of course, were you able to break away from the computer and go touch grass, as Jeff Grubb said after our interview?
No, I definitely needed to. And I did, again, just, you know, talking about like going to a Laker game with my son, doing some other stuff with the family, to kind of get away from that, because it was surreal in that moment doing that interview. And then knowing, like, I know, you know, the kind of funny crew, everyone was sitting there watching it in real time and getting their instant reaction and go, whoa, this might be a pretty big deal. And then to obviously see everything that happened the coming days afterwards. And to your point, having your name in the headlines like that, you know, with that type of interview, you know, with the head of Xbox, it's good to not just read the comments, because some are going to be good, some are going to be bad. You know, it is what it is at that point. You've already said it. You've already done it. You just own it and move on from that. So, yeah, I definitely got away because it was needed.
I like that, guys. Well, definitely was an incredible week for us. We took a nice little break. We're back again with my gaming daddies over here with Jeff Grubb this week. And, of course, we got a whole lot of fun because next week I'll be joined by one of my inspirations and heroes, Ryan McCaffrey, on the podcast. We finally locked him down. PlayStation showcases are trying to hold me and Ryan back from hanging out together. But we're going to have him on the podcast next week. We got a great lineup for you. And, of course, Summer Game Fest is right around the corner, which means the Xbox Games Showcase will be happening very, very soon. So we got a whole lot of Xbox news to talk about, because this is the Kinda Funny XCast. Each and every Thursday at 6 a.m. West Coast, Best Coast time, we bring you the Xbox news you need to know about, of course, on YouTube.com/KindaFunnyGames, podcast services around the globe, and RoosterTeeth.com. Don't forget that Kinda Funny is now Epic Games Partners, which means you can support the team in a brand new way. If you're buying games off the Epic Games Store, if you're upgrading your look in Rocket League, Fortnite, or Fall Guys with the new creative mode, please use our Epic creator code KINDAFUNNY at checkout anytime to support the team. And talking about those who support us here, we want to thank everyone, whether you watch live, whether you're watching over on Twitch or YouTube, or if you're supporting us on Patreon, thank you all so much for helping keeping the lights on and supporting all 11 full-time employees here at Kinda Funny. Thank you to our Patreon producer for the month of May, Delaney Twining. Thank you for your support. And thank you to our sponsor for the week, Shady Rays. But I'll tell you all about that in just a little bit. Let's dive into it, because, of course, the last episode we had was all about Phil Spencer and the state of Xbox after Redfall and, of course, the CMA blocking the Activision Blizzard deal. So, Jeff, I kind of want to talk to you, because me and Paris, of course, have shared that interview. But I want to talk about words being misconstrued. And the big headline coming out of that was, Xbox needs great games, or does it not need great games, Jeff?
Right.
Of course, that was the big headline that kind of went with it when we asked Phil about what is going on with Xbox. Do you still feel like you have the focus on the consoles? And, you know, that was the one big line that a lot of people took away from that. What do you think about that, Jeff? Does Xbox need great games to be moved from third to second or first place in the console area?
I think that little twist there at the end, Mike, is the thing that I think Phil focused on, and why his answer had some not too obvious nuance to it, where he was like, we're not thinking about third, second, first place in terms of that's our motivating factor in making great games. I think that's what he was trying to say.
Yeah. Yes.
I think it goes without saying that if you are in the video gaming business, you need great games. We see the evidence of what happens when a publisher or a new going concern comes in and doesn't have that stuff. I mean, Stadia was never going to stand a chance without great exclusives. There's just no reason to buy into that ecosystem until there was that. And there was not even really the sniff of a promise of that. When it comes to Microsoft, I think that that answer that he was giving, it came from a place of, we are very much in contact with our biggest fans. We are very much, we exchange messages with them. We go on their podcasts, we go on their shows. And I think that when he is answering that question, he is answering it as if it was being asked from that perspective of, are you going to go get back in the console race 100%? Like, that is going to be your focus. And obviously, no, they are looking in a different direction that still requires them to make great games. But if the idea was to make great games to beat PlayStation in the console race, the answer was no. But of course, yeah, great games, they need them. I think that and they also do need to focus on Xbox consoles at the same time, because that strategy of growing in this other direction is a long-term prospect. And in the immediate future, where you're going to sell like Xbox Game Pass, if that's still like the number one thing, is going to be when you sell a new Xbox. So you still have to be focused on that. It's just that's not the primary strategy. That is part of a larger strategy.
Yeah, if I could jump on that point of what you're saying, because if I have a regret from that interview, it was that we did not have time to properly follow up on what he said, because I was thinking in the moment, I got what he said, but obviously in retrospect, I can see how it's been interpreted the way that it was. I've always looked at Xbox as their strategy, and he's talked about this, it's like since 2020, he's been talking about this, but I've looked at Xbox's strategy that it's no longer about selling the most consoles, which is what he was talking about. Yeah. It's they have, let's just say for all intents and purposes, there's 200 million console players that play across PlayStation, Xbox, Nintendo, right? They're trying to reach the people beyond that. They're trying to obviously pull in the PC base. They're trying to grab that mobile crowd. They're trying to grab my wife, who does not play games, right? They're trying to get her to play games. So it's about, instead of trying to get people to come to where the games are, let's instead bring the games to where the people are. That's the philosophy that I've seen with them. And I just think maybe Phil could have clarified that a little better, because to me, it is a no-brainer. Of course they have to make great. None of this works if you don't make great games. But
he did follow up on Twitter a little bit. The friend of mine was like, hey, I don't think they need to make great games to sell Xbox. They just need to make great games. And Phil's like, exactly. Very well said.
Yes.
Yep. And it's, when you go back and listen to the context, and you have to be like generous with understanding the context in that situation, because he was in a bad mood, right? He admitted that during the interview, and he was in like that sort of gloomy mindset. So I think a lot of that tainted how people heard that his response. And I think it also tainted the color of the words he said. But really, when you look at the context, he was saying, when people come to me and talk to me about winning the console race, and it's okay, that's where he was talking about. And they're just not going to do that anymore. And but it does go back to like, yeah, they're trying to get your wife. They're trying to get these billions of gamers that they talk about. They know right now that is still mostly a pipe dream. That is still something that mostly happens after a 10, 15 year period.
Yep.
And in the meantime, the Xbox is where this stuff is going to happen. And regardless, whatever the strategy is, really the strategy of being in the video game business is making video games. You have to believe in video games. That you have to say, well, we have a problem as a video game company. We have problems. Here's all our problems. What they specifically are doesn't matter. The answer to every single one of those problems, the solution should be, let's make a good video game. And I think when every sort of publisher kind of gets in that mindset, which they wax and wane with that stuff. We see like Activision right now. It's like, we believe in making Call of Duty. We don't really believe in making much else. And it's like, well, hopefully when Microsoft comes in, they can change that. But does Microsoft believe in that? I think they do. But they need to kind of keep proving that.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's part of where he was like, it's not going to matter if Starfield is an 11 out of 10. Look, I hope it's 11 out of 10, and I hope it's a great game. Yes, but that alone is not going to magically have them outpace PlayStation or Nintendo in hardware sales. It is going to take a long term, to your point, consistency of quality games versus what we've seen obviously over the last few years, which has kind of created this uproar. So I got what he was saying, but I do think he should have clarified.
Yeah, I don't blame anyone who misunderstood. It was a little bit muddled, and it was very much easy to hear it as, this is why making great games doesn't matter. And that's not what he was trying to say.
Right.
But I heard a lot of people on YouTube, a lot of places were just like, you don't need like the 11 out of 10 thing. You know, make 11 out of 10 Starfield, people aren't going to go sell their PS5s. And everyone's like, they don't need to sell their PS5s. They just need to buy Xbox. And that's what he was saying. Right. He was just going in a way that was kind of going through the reasoning for why they think that way. And that sounded like a reason why they weren't doing it, when it's actually exactly the reason they are doing it.
Yeah, I mean, again, the way I interpreted it was, they're in the ecosystem business, right? It's not necessarily about the console business anymore. And be perfectly honest, even look at what PlayStation's doing. They're obviously starting to pivot more into the ecosystem business. Absolutely. Of, hey, let's get more people in PC, mobile, et cetera, because that's the future. That's how you grow this industry, is getting more people versus the same 200 million people playing the same games over and over. But whether it's PlayStation, Nintendo, or Xbox, if the games aren't good, no one cares. So to me, that was the no-brainer of it. It's, you got to have the quality games. And obviously, Xbox is doing things like Game Pass. You know, obviously, with this Activision deal, they're trying to, you know, pivot into more mobile things as well, because that's how you get more people to play. But of course, the games have to be quality. Of course, Starfield has to be quality. Of course, Forza has to be quality. Of course, Hellblade, Perfect Dark, Avowed on down the line. These, if they have more Redfalls, then that's a problem. And yeah. And I think, kind of pivoting that just slightly, I think the one silver lining out of all of this with Redfall, I will say for the thousandth time, I agree with that game coming out. It should have been delayed, in my personal opinion. But it came out. It is what it is. The scores are what they are. The heat that they're taking is justified because of that. But I do think the one silver lining, and Phil did touch on this, is they're going to look at their internal processes now. They're going to look at their quality control. Maybe they do need to be a little more hands-on versus what they have been. And one point with Bethesda in general, you have to think, that's an entire publisher that they're trying to onboard into their org. That is not easy. And it's not an excuse, but it's not easy. So I'm sure there's some gaps that are still there that they're going to need to look at and fix.
And it's like, there is questions about that, because are they trying to onboard? There's... internally, I know that it works this way, where Bethesda still is just Bethesda. And that goes so far as to, like, the perks that apply to Microsoft employees do not apply to Bethesda employees. They have a whole separate HR system, a whole separate employee hierarchy. All that stuff lives in a completely different silo. And I think that that culture very easily could produce something like Redfall, where... that's their problem. They have all these things over there. They have their own processes for dealing this way. They've made games for a long time. Like, yeah, there's some issues with that game. We see that, but we're busy. We've got a lot of stuff happening over here under old Microsoft Gaming. We're not going to pay attention to that. Now, that is obviously not acceptable. Like, because it does result in a game like Redfall, and at least not acceptable. Like, whatever you want to do, put out a bad game. You can put out a bad game. That's acceptable. Whatever. But in terms of, if you want us to care about it, not acceptable. So I think you're right that they seem to be saying the right stuff about Starfield. They always kind of say the right stuff, which is the one thing about that interview. And Phil said it over and over during that interview, very mindful of this, that his words can only go so far. We need to get our hands on the controller. That's where we're at with Starfield. It's where we're at with all of these games. Keep saying the right stuff. Sure. But boy, that proof needs to be in that pudding.
But see, that again, and I don't want to belabor on this too much, but that again is where I say, and I think Phil said this a little bit himself, but maybe it's a thing. And when I talk about kind of, you know, onboarding them into the overall Xbox org, in the sense of, sure, they might remain independent and everything that you said, but it's almost that you can no longer have that third party mentality. You're now part of the first party publishing team, right? There is an expectation when you get games from first party. So Redfall is being judged differently because of that. You can't just go, okay, we screwed up, we'll move on to the next thing. In my opinion, Redfall has done more harm to the brand of Xbox than it ever would to what Bethesda previously was. Agreed. And I think that is the problem. I said this, shout out to Khalif, when I was on Spawn On Me, I said this. You could have delayed Redfall to, let's say, summer 2024. And it was the exact same game that we just got. It was a 58, whatever the score is right now. But you had Starfield, Hellblade, Forza, Avowed as examples in that interim, and they're all quality. Nobody would care. I think the bigger issue is this being the first salvo into your $70 games,
first $70 game,
next gen only experience. There is an expectation, and that's where I think it does more harm to the overall Xbox brand than anything.
And talking about, of course, great games, Jeff Grubb, that's what I want to kind of move this conversation into. Of course, Xbox does need great games. There's no question about that. And we've had a rocky couple of years since the start of the Xbox Series X generations, this next-gen console launch. Had a solid first year. And then quiet 2 years here, if we're being realistic. Do you still have faith that Xbox can deliver great games as we start to look down the pipeline of a Forza Motorsport that still is not dated? We look at Starfield that's dated with after a year delay and onward of question marks. Do you think and still have the faith that they can deliver great games?
I mean, all the pieces are there, right? I think they have the capacity. I mean, that rumor that I don't know if I believe that, like, id Software coming in to help with the shooting on Starfield. Maybe it's true, maybe it's not. I have zero idea. That sounds good to me, that you have those pieces make those things sing together. All that stuff is there. I think the question comes down to, do they have the vision of leadership over these studios that is facilitating and encouraging those sorts of collaborations or unlocking them, however, and I'm sure that's a complicated thing. I'm sure it's difficult. I know getting people together to record a video about playing video games is difficult to schedule. So getting a whole, like, these two teams to work together, that's got to take a lot, but it's worth it. These are big bets you're making, and you got some of these bets got to begin paying off. I think they have the pieces. Do they have the vision? The things I hear from internally is most people feel that there is a lack of vision from the team, from the people that are supposed to be overseeing that stuff, the people that are going to the studios every day, and so it's hard to be like, well, they aren't giving me like the urgency to go and help with this stuff. I'm not going to take the initiative myself. This is a big Byzantine, you know, corporate structure. Going through these barriers is not super easy. So I think we go back to revisiting those processes. I hope that's what's happening. I think some of these games are going to hit. Right now, today, I still have faith that Starfield is going to be good because of what Phil Spencer said. If that game comes out and it is disappointing, whatever that means, if it's disappointing when it comes out, I'm gonna begin losing a lot of faith. I think Redfall, I buy the story that they saw Redfall early on and they weren't thrilled about it and they never really got hands on and tried to help that project, something that Phil admitted and took responsibility for. Good. Starfield, he says, we've done the exact opposite. Okay, what does that look like? It better look good.
Yeah. Agreed on that one, Jeff Grubb. And yeah, you talk about bringing in a new team with Bethesda and how does that work eternally and who is overseeing all this with the vision and also with the right kind of pedigree of leadership to say, hey, this isn't good. We need to elevate that. Are you worried now of looking at Activision Blizzard King, of adding in a whole nother team? Is that too much for this leadership team currently? Is that just going to add more of these mid-tier games or mismanagement that can't lead all three of these teams together? Do you think this will help it in any way, shape, or form?
I think that it's a potential problem, at least the way that they do things right now. I think if Active, and it shouldn't work this way, but if it works to the point where Activision Blizzard is sort of just kind of going business as usual, and then to unlock all that stuff that we talked about early in the early days of the acquisition of Phil Spencer doing interviews, he's like, here's a list of all these Activision games I would love to bring back. If any of that stuff's going to happen, I think it will require someone from Microsoft Gaming coming down and saying, hey, all right, let's actually make that stuff happen. If that person is Matt Booty, someone who is clearly already stretched as thin as possible, that's a problem. You need to have another structure in place. There needs to be more happening. And there's so much between like Matt Booty and actually making that happen. And I think it requires a lot of rethinking of their processes. I don't know if it's a realistic thing.
Paris, do you think bringing on a third team is going to be too much for this team? Or do you think they're figuring it out right now with Bethesda and will have the vision once that time has come?
No, I'm with Jeff on that. It sounds like there would need to be an additional pillar there that would, I don't know, parallel with Matt Booty or reporting, but there would need to be somebody else that's helping to manage that, because now we're talking 30 plus studios at that point. So that's a lot. What is PlayStation at? I don't even know how many studios PlayStation has.
High teens.
Yeah. 20s, yeah. Yeah. Like so that's what yeah. I mean. So it seems
24,
like
four, I want to say, yeah.
Double what they're doing. And I know I apologize, technical issues with my camera for those that are watching the video. I don't know what the heck is going on, but yeah, it would definitely require some more oversight at the leadership level for sure. And I think, again, that's one thing that I think about just even at Phil Spencer's level. Phil had to come on. Phil needed to take the heat for what happened because he's the leader. He's the head of everything. I totally get that. But it goes back to the fact that at his level, he's not in the weeds of seeing all that. That's not his job to do the day to day. There's other people that should be doing that day to day work to make sure that these games are on time from a project management standpoint and being delivered quality. And if they're not, now that's where obviously a Phil would need to come in and make the decision if we're going to delay something. But those are the things that need to happen. And if now we're talking 30 plus studios, wow, I can't even imagine. You know what, how that is on a daily basis. It will require more people, excuse me, to be involved.
Now, of course, we talk about this acquisition as if it is going through. It is not set in stone yet. Jeff, I want to get a temperature check on your side because, of course, when we brought on Phil, CMA had just recently blocked the Activision acquisition. Of course, on the opposite side, the EU has just approved it earlier in the week as of recording this. And so, Jeff, we see back and forth, of course, the FTC here in America. We look at the CMA all causing problems. We've had some approvals from different countries around the globe. Where do you fall right now? Can Xbox actually pull this off from your thoughts and information? Or do you think this could become maybe even longer in the process or possibly blocked altogether?
Yeah, there's always the chance that the road gets too rough and they ban it. Of course, that's always on the table. They can always pull the plug. At a certain point, the sunk cost fallacy becomes too stark and they ban it. I think, though, right now, that the way that they talk about it, the way that they're so aggressive about it, the way that they make every week there's new news about how they are trying to position themselves to be the most in the good graces of regulators. I think that the likely scenario here is after the EU approval, the FTC will go through with what it's doing. The FTC is definitely trying to run out the clock. They're definitely trying to get Microsoft to abandon it because they are very unlikely to win their argument based on the merits, because the United States' rules about these things are very lax, especially compared to Europe. And if Europe approved it, there's just not a lot of chance that Lena Khan's going to be able to get that court case to actually come in her favor. Even if it does, there's still stuff that Microsoft could do to push it through there. So I think the likely scenario, and if this is something I would not have thought was likely early on, is they probably do lose in the UK. They push the deal forward anyhow, and they just work around the UK. And everyone else in Europe and the United States and North America and the rest of the world gets a lot of benefits because of all the stuff that Game Pass is going to unlock for Activision games and Blizzard games and King stuff. And the UK is going to have to look around and be like, oh, okay, well, we don't get Call of Duty and Game Pass. That kind of stinks, actually. Well, yeah, what can we do? This is how it is, and we're going to work around you. And that's wild, but I think it's actually pretty likely at this point.
Harris, yeah. That is a wild one. Do you agree with that? Yeah. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I'm with Jeff on that because I think I just saw this morning that China approved it as well. I think I saw that, but I could be off.
Right. They were definitely in line to do it. Yeah.
But the point is of what Jeff is saying is if it just comes down to the UK being the outlier that has not approved this, because again, you know, I hate talking about this, but you know, if the FTC looks like it's going to go through is what I'm trying to say. So if it goes through everywhere else in the world except the UK, that I highly doubt that's going to be the blocker to stop a $70 billion deal. To Jeff's point, they'll just work around it.
Yep.
So I think ultimately that's what happens here in this scenario. I think with them getting the EU to approve it, the FTC, with just the way our legal system worked with the courts and everything, it looks like the FTC won't have a leg to stand on to block it. It's going to go through. So we'll obviously see how long that takes. And then I guess we'll get the advantages of having these games at Game Pass. So
yep, it'll be nice.
Wait for more games to come. But yeah, that's what I want to talk about, is some great games on the way, because we got Jeff Grubb. Summer's in the air, and it's time to start talking about some positive things coming to your Xbox console. But we're going to talk about great games right after a word from our sponsor.
Shout out to RTX for sponsoring this episode. If you're looking to spend an amazing summer weekend in Austin, Texas, the RTX convention is the perfect excuse. RTX is a gaming, comedy, animation, and podcast festival that Rooster Teeth is throwing in Austin, Texas at the convention center from July 7th through 9th. And rumor has it, a couple kind of funny people whose names may or may not rhyme with Mo Trike Like and Loey Moel are planning to head down to party as well. RTX has so much to offer over the 3 days, with activities like a free paranormal themed escape room, achievement hunter, mini golf, VTubing with Ruby characters, and over a dozen live shows with guests like Dungeons and Daddies and Therapy Gecko. There are also evening events each night, from parties to a comedy showcase, an evening rave, and everything in between that can be found in Austin. Buying Ultra and Platinum badges will get you the highest perks, but there's also a solid deal right now where people that purchase weekend and daily badges get another badge for 50% off. Go to rtxaustin.com to select badges and to find additional information. Don't miss out on one of the biggest parties in Austin this summer. Shout out to Rocket Money for sponsoring this episode. We all love gobbling up content, and we have an understanding of what subscriptions we use, or do we? Do you know how much your subscriptions really cost? Most Americans think that they spend around $80 a month on subscriptions, when the actual total is closer to $200+. You could be wasting hundreds of dollars each and every month on subscriptions that you don't even know about. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions. It monitors spending and it helps you lower your bills all in one place. Rocket Money has saved some of us here at Kind of Funny a ton of money, and it can help you too. Rocket Money also helps you manage all your finance in one place and automatically can help you categorize your expenses so you can easily track your budget in real time. So stop throwing your money away. You can cancel unwanted subscriptions and manage your expenses the easy way by going to rocketmoney.com/kindoffunny. That's rocketmoney.com/kindoffunny. rocketmoney.com/kindoffunny.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Let's talk about great games on the way, because we've had a new Xbox Game Pass update, of course, for the second half of May. We have Planet of Lana right around the corner for all of you to jump into. We look forward to Forza. We look forward to Starfield. But I want to talk about, what great games are you excited for, Jeff Grubb? Because, of course, yes, people know you as an industry insider, but you're just the gamer that you are. What games have you been playing lately? What are you excited for on the Xbox side that players should know about?
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Yeah, I'm. It's really for the Xbox. It is kind of all eyes to Starfield right now, but I'm hopeful about all the stuff that they have. Really, it's Starfield and their showcase. I want to see them make big promises and then catch us up on the previous promises. You know, I want to see Perfect Dark. I want to see Avowed. Who knows what shows up at that showcase? I think the things that are the next big game that's like most likely to come out of the ones that don't have a release date or haven't been discussed in those terms is probably Hellblade 2. And I'm like, I want to see if Hellblade 2 could turn into a game that I'm curious about. I'm someone who's like bounced off of Hellblade 1, but the Hellblade 2, the stuff that they've shown off so far has been so sort of spectacular that I'm like, I'm curious about it at the very least. But yeah, really, I'm a huge Skyrim fan. I spent, you know, 1,000 hours in that game. I played a ton of Oblivion. I love Fallout 3. I love Fallout 4. Even though all my friends make fun of me for loving Fallout 4, I love Fallout 4. give me more of that. Yeah, it's a good game. And so, all right. So Starfield, that's gonna be one of those games in space, and they are promising all these new features, and they have this new engine that's or mini improvements to an existing engine, whatever how they want to phrase it. I need to see that game. That is, I really want that to be as special to me as a Skyrim. That would be incredible.
I like that a lot, Jeff. And that's one of me and Paris's both most anticipated games. Of course, we look forward to more. I want to learn more about Avalanche Studios and Project Contraband, right? I want to know what's up with Contraband.
That'd be fantastic.
I'm excited about that. I love what that studio has made, right? You think of Mad Max, you think of the Just Cause series. Those are some of my favorite games. And the idea of a multiplayer situation where we're working to put together heists, there's going to be some vehicle stuff going on. That game has me interested. But of course, just like Xbox does, they tease me with these games, tell me absolutely nothing, and then ask me to wait and sit on my hands for months, years at a time, and I have no idea what this is, right? And my worry is, you know, we go to the worst case scenario, Everwild, right? Of like, I saw that once, I got excited, and then they never told me anything about it again. I know this is a third party group they're working with, but like, I want to know more about this partnership, and will we get those details at Summer Games Showcase, right? There's so many question marks from not only this, but Fable, of course, Perfect Dark. Where does that fall with now Crystal Dynamics doing their own Tomb Raider as well? Where does that go in the timeline of everything they're working on? And what is the initiative doing with this team? And also, Jeff Grubb, what's up with Halo? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Jeff, give me a quick temp check on your Halo Infinite gameplay, right? Have you fallen off like the rest of us? Are you still holding on hope with, of course, Forge and the custom browser list? Or will we see Project Tatanka this summer?
Yeah, I think Tatanka is actually one of those ones that probably will show up at the showcase. I hope it does kind of have a chance to, you know, you're never going to wipe the slate clean with Halo, but a chance to reset everyone's emotions regarding the franchise, which, you know, those things run really hot, really cold. And for me, Halo Infinite was a game that I adored. I loved playing Halo Infinite. But I also had a relationship where it's like Halo was never fully my franchise. And so it was cool to get in here and really enjoy Halo Infinite. They nailed it. They made a game that they needed to make to get me on board. And then but I didn't need that endless content. And then I was surrounded by people who did need that to continue to care about it. And as their feelings spoiled on it, it's like, well, I'm not even going to bring up the idea of playing Halo with them. They're just going to be bummed out. And I don't want to be surrounded by those feelings. So it was like, as that happens, so this is a social activity gaming that gets to you. So kind of Halo got lowered in its estimate or in my estimation of it. And so I know that people have begun coming back around to it after the Forge updates and stuff like that, but it's been very hard to get back in there myself. So I do wonder if they use Tonka as a chance to sort of just get everyone to think about something else and let Halo Infinite sort of just continue to slowly rise in the background, which is probably the right move.
Do you believe that Project Tatanka is a battle royale, Jeff Grubb, from maybe things you've heard before? Of course, all the articles we've seen from Jez Corden over at Windows Central. Do you believe this is a battle royale, or is it going to be something more? As like you said, maybe Halo Infinite needs a shot in the arm. The franchise needs a big pick-me-up, truly and honestly, from the fans. Is a battle royale enough? Is it going to be that, or is it more, do you think?
I think that it's likely a battle royale, at least to start. I think that there is a chance that they kind of go try to make it something like a platform. You know how Apex Legends is continue to add new modes and stuff over time? I think they could go in that direction where, like, this is going to be the playground where we can experiment with stuff. The big thing is, like, this is going to be Unreal Engine, and that means that you can maybe experiment a little bit faster and try stuff a little bit different more frequently. And I think that maybe opens them up to doing more, but I think out of the gate, you establish kind of a big map that maybe is taken from or inspired or exactly kind of like the map from Infinite. You let people roam in there together with hundreds of players or 100 players plus, and let them get used to this idea of, all right, this is another way that Halo can be. And then from there, let's grow it and see what else we can try. But I think overall that would be, you know, mimicking the Fortnite style of doing things is not a bad idea at all.
Not a bad idea. We have talked about chasing trends and how sometimes that can be bad for gamers and developers of like, hey, you don't have to chase the Destiny 2 trend. We've been there, done that.
Definitely not.
Do something new. But it has proven that, you know, in the first person shooter space, not a bad idea to chase some trends. But I am interested to see what this is, Jeff, right? Because Halo Infinite to me needs a shot in the arm. There's a dedicated player base. There's players that have fallen off like myself who love Halo, but have not gotten enough out of that studio at 343 content wise to really want to go back all the time and play the same map. So I'm looking forward to seeing what this team can show. And I think this summer they got to do it right. As opposed to Paris, Gears, right? Where does Gear stand in this mix of all things from the coalition? Do they have the good grace of the players where they have a couple more years, or do they need to see some gears this year or maybe next?
Oh, I am having the worst technical issues of all.
I
missed half of your question. I heard you asking me about gears.
Uh-huh. Do you think we'll see gears this summer, Paris? Anything gears
I don't. I don't. And I'll answer that and circle back to the Halo thing, because I want to make one comment about that. I don't think so, because I don't think you need it. I think that's something you can hold off, because realistically, we're not getting Gear 6 for a while.
Nope, we lost him.
We've lost him right there. But Jeff, I'll tell you this. On the gear side of things, I don't need Gear 6. Oh.
Did you lose me again?
Yeah, we just lost you, but you're happy.
You froze for a second, then we lost you a little bit, but we're continuing. Yeah, gears. It seems unlikely.
I apologize for all these technical issues. I don't know what the heck is going on. But no, I was just saying, I don't think you need it this year. I think you can hold it off to next year or the year after, because Gear 6 is going to be a ways away. So there's enough that they need. There's enough things that they need to show at this one that let's not take time away from that trying to show me gears. But going to the Halo point, to me, make that the one more thing. Make that the one more thing and use it as a sign of confidence in Halo.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Look at this new thing that we're doing with Halo with certain affinity, because I do think it's evolved beyond just a battle royale at this point. So you show that as the one more thing coming in 2024, whenever it's going to happen, and use it as a thing of, this is how we're going to get everyone back and excited about Halo again. That's what I would personally do if I were in marketing.
I like that, Paris. I was going to say, on the gear side of things, I might not need the big full-fledged gears, but I'll tell you, if you gave me another situation like a Gears Hive Busters, where it's just a smaller slice of something fun like that, I think the community would really pop, and that would be really fun to get involved in that. And, of course, see what the coalition is showing off tech-wise on this next generation of stuff that they're doing with Unreal. It would be really cool to see. And, yeah, smaller snippets like that, Halo could use that as well if they could give us a shot in the arm of some sort of campaign with Master Chief. That's a smaller size would be great, but I think they're kind of far behind on what they're doing over there with that one. But Jeff, let's kick it with summer. What do you expect to see? What are your big list items that you know will be there, or you expect to be there here at the Summer Games Fest?
Yeah, I think we're kind of getting some early words on some stuff. I mean, obviously, they just announced Mortal Kombat, and I think that's the kind of stuff that could show up in any of these showcases. In terms of like what Microsoft's going to bring, I think Contraband feels like one we probably will get an update on. I think they have, of those announced games, I think at least half of them need pretty substantial updates. And maybe you got to at least mention all of them. I think there's a chance still that something like a Fable, which definitely is having some development issues, but that, don't freak out, everybody. Every game has development issues. They got to just figure them out. That's just normal these days. So it's like, but it's like that kind of thing where that, you know, if a team's having problems, maybe you don't want to force them to make an asset for a big commercial. Like, just let them keep working on it in the background. So maybe not Fable. You know, maybe some other games are in similar situations. But I do want to see, more than I want to see new games, I want to see promises to be delivered on. I want to see them take those games that they've already said are going to be great and begin proving them, as much gameplay as possible. Something I know Phil continues to talk about whenever he gets in one of these interviews. He's like, yeah, we want gameplay. That I don't want that many CG trailers anymore. I think if they do make a new announcement, that's okay if that's a CG trailer. But anything that's been previously announced, we need some real gameplay, and it needs to be exciting. It needs to prove itself in a Pepsi Challenge style way, where it's just, all right, this tastes sweet out of the bottle. There we go. Yeah, I want more of this, please. In terms of specifics, it's a big question. I think that that Wu-Tang Clan game I talked about forever ago. I mean, where's that been? I that thing's real. Are they still? I guess it was real. Are they still working on it? I think so. It'd be cool if like a lot of those games I've mentioned before began popping off, and I would love to see like that fill out one of the slots in the show. But they're having a big long conference. They have a lot of opportunity to talk about a lot of stuff. I hope that they bring the fire. I really do, because I think that they have a chance to really reset a lot of the tone about Xbox coming out of this. And if they don't, it's like, man, that's a lot, even more pressure on Starfield. Not that Starfield doesn't, it's going to have all the pressure no matter what.
Paris, how do you feel about that? Because, yeah, you brought up a big list to fill during our interview. Do you think, just like Jeff, will we need to see a fair amount of those, or at least half?
Yeah, my thing is, sorry, technical issues again, but my thing is, delivering on those games. the ones that we've been seeing since 2020 and have not had a lot of updates to. And obviously, Phil alluded to, we will get some of those updates at the showcase. But show those games, show us gameplay, and deliver on them. Even if you can't give a specific release date on some of these things, is, you know, to the point, AAA game development's complicated, things happen, kind of at least give us a range of when to expect some of these things. So let's just take Avowed as an example. I don't need to know the exact day Avowed's coming out, but show me Avowed and say, I don't know, spring 2024. At least that gives me a range of when to expect. Or you don't even have to say spring, just say 2024. So at least I know, hey, this is something I can expect next year. I think that's where we need to get with this, is start just letting us know, because there's so many games that we already know about. Let's see what In Exile is working on. Let's see what Compulsion Games is working on. You know, that's what I want to come out of this showcase. Again, going back to Starfield, and right, wrong, indifferent, there is pressure on that game now. 100% there is. So whatever this Starfield Direct is going to be, I want to come out of that. Since I will be there in person, you know, watching that at you know, at the LA Fan Fest, I want to walk out of there with a smile on my face going, man, absolutely, I can't wait for Starfield. This looks amazing. That's what I want to be saying. I don't want to walk out of that going, well, I don't know, the combat, you know, I don't want to have that hesitation. I want to be excited about it, because again, I'm going to bring up the competition for just a second with PlayStation. I already know I will be excited about Spider-Man 2. And that goes to the pedigree of what Insomniac has done, what those previous games have done. That's where Xbox needs to get to with their games, where I just assume, right? For as much crap as people gave me about Cyberpunk 2077 and the way that game launched, I had faith going into it because of the track record CD Projekt Red had with The Witcher 3, right? So I went on that faith that I know the next game's going to be great. That's what I want to start seeing from Xbox Game Studios. That's what I want to see come out of this showcase, where now I can be excited for Perfect Dark, Fable, you know, on down the line, where I know these games are going to be great. So it starts in June. This is a starting point for that. They have to start delivering on that. So I personally think they will. I want to be clear on that, but to what Phil Spencer said himself, until we have a controller in our hands,
yep,
don't believe anything I say.
Let's talk about some fun stuff, guys, as we start to ramp down the episode. While we were gone, GQ released a nice article about the 100 best video games of all time. Of course, Paris, you were part of that. Blessing, and I believe Andy here, Kind of Funny, were part of that as well. Jeff Grubb, were you a part of the mix putting in your top 100 games?
I was indeed, yes.
All right, let's talk about that. Can you guys... I was not, but I'll tell you my top 100 games. Halo, 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 and Halo.
It spits hot fire, yeah.
It's just hot fire. No, no, I'm not important enough like that. But let's talk about the process before we go into the top 100, guys, because, of course, I want to talk about the top 100. I want to know some of your honorable mentions that you guys might have put in. Then we'll talk about the top 10 that was released on this article. But what was the process like? Did you guys have to present 100 of your favorite video games? Did you have to rank them in order? What was that like, Jeff Grubb, for you to put that in?
Yeah, it was. He reached out and he asked for our top 10 games, and just so happened to recently, like in the weeks before, I ran a stream on my Twitch channel where I did my top 100 games.
Sweet.
So I just handed over that list. Now, had I been thinking like just about a top 10 for someone else that's going to get mixed in with the voting, I probably would have done different games. But also, I'm lazy, so no, I just handed over the 10 games from my list, and it worked out fine. But it's like I'll tell you, my number one was the number one on there, so I'm like, I can't complain, everything else is fine.
I like that. Okay, good. Paris, did you have the same feeling? You of course probably provided your top 10 just like Jeff did, and were you pleased with what your spots were?
Yeah I mean, I felt good about, because I did it from my own personal top 10, not what I thought the consensus would be of a top 10. So some of my games showed up in there, some didn't, but I was fine with it. I think for the most part, because I shared my top 10 on the list, most people seem to, you know, agree with that. These are, you know, some pretty strong titles, and it made sense in just the overall scope of the top 100. I will say my number one forever will be Super Mario Bros. 3. It's just that's my game. The game that just locked me in. And I forget where I think it was in the top 10. I think it was. I can't remember
I think now. So. I'm going to look it up right now. Yeah.
But But yeah, that was my number one for sure. I guess I'll just say I have an honorable mention that almost made my top 10.
Ooh, that I like that.
Won't be on a lot of people's list. Mega Man 2. Mega Man 2 was, it's probably 11 or 12 for me up in there somewhere. But that's another game. Like, my top 10 was based on the games that had memorable moments that have stayed with me over the years. And that made up that list for me. And like I said, Mega Man 2 would probably be just outside that top 10 as another one that did that.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, right? Jeff, you can maybe help me out with this. Where do you fall when someone asks for your top 10? Is it yours that you love the most? Is it the, oh, what I think everyone and their mama loves? Where do you fall on that, Jeff, when somebody asks you about that? Or when it comes down to your game of the year, do you look at it as the best product of the year or the games that stuck out to you at the end of the year, Jeff?
Yeah, it's going to depend on the context of what we are saying as we are deciding what the final product that we're going to present to people is going to look like. Again, this GQ one where I'm like, it's a popular vote essentially, and it's weighted by where you put in the top 10. Mm-hmm. I put ECO, which is one of my favorite games of all time. No one knows what it is.
Not the dolphin.
No, not Echo the Dolphin. ECO, it's an educational game where it's basically Minecraft with a bunch of systems where it tracks your pollution levels, and there's an asteroid that's coming to hit you, and everyone has to work together with their own specialities to create the stuff to stop the asteroid from hitting the Earth and hitting the planet, destroying everything. It's really cool, but it's obscure. It's an education game. Most people haven't played it. I would not, if I was trying to actually have an influence on a list, I would not burn a spot on something like that. Now, for my personal list, I would definitely, that is one of my favorite games of all time. But it's if I'm trying to have an influence on the best games of all time, I probably would have put something else in there. In general, when we go to do game of the year, though, like Giant Bomb, we are making a statement about what is representative of this staff. And therefore, there are going to be some concessions, but mostly it's going to be the things that spoke to us the most. And then if I put out my own personal top 10, it's anything goes, no rules, just whatever I'm feeling in the moment.
I love that. Yeah, I'm all about just what's my personal top 10. Let's have some fun with it. Let's check out the GQ top 100 greatest games of all time. I'm going to go through the top 10 is what I want to talk about with you guys. And then we're going to give some honorable mentions, maybe some that dropped lower than you thought they would or some that stuck out to you. But
I got one.
At number 10, Half-Life 2. Shout out to Half-Life 2. At number 9, Dark Souls, number 1. Number 8, Portal 2. Number 7, Metal Gear Solid. Number 6, Mass Effect 2. Number 5, The Witcher 3, Wild Hunt. Number 4, Bloodborne. Number 3, Tetris. Number 2, The Last of Us. And number 1, Zelda Breath of the Wild. Paris, I'll kick it off with you. This top 10 from GQ, what do you think?
I mean, it's pretty solid. I can't complain. I was actually surprised that both Portal games made it into the top 10. I had Portal 2 in my top 10 as an example. I had Witcher 3 in my top 10. I had Mass Effect 2 in my top 10. So,
yeah, you might be thinking Half-Life 2. Oh, Dark Souls. Did you mean Dark Souls?
Because there's a FromSoft. There's Dark Souls and Bloodborne.
Bloodborne, both in the top 10. Those are
two. Yeah. But as far as a surprise goes, I saw Super Mario 3 was all the way down at 36. I definitely thought that would be higher. Not necessarily in the top 10, but I thought it would have been higher.
Or Boomers, Paris.
Yeah,
the kids don't understand us anymore.
Y'all got Tetris in here. Don't worry. You got Tetris in there.
Oh, my God.
Okay. My apologies. I was looking at the list. I thought it said that Portal was in the top 10 as well. But no, I get your point now.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, for what you just ran down, not too surprising at all. It seems pretty solid to me. I honestly couldn't complain about anything that was in that top 10.
How many of the games in your top 10 are in this top 10? Because only one of mine is, and it is number one.
Can you pull that top 10 back up one more time, and then I will tell you.
Yeah, because it's I had my personal one, and let me see here. Let me see if I can. I thought I had it right over here. I had my top 10 was Breath of the Wild number 1, then Metroid Prime, ECO, Zelda Link's Awakening, Hitman World of Assassination, Zelda Link Between Worlds, Mario Odyssey, NBA Street Volume 2, Super Mario Galaxy 2, and Hades. And Titanfall 2 at 11, which I could have. I would have put that up there instead of ECO if I was trying to manipulate the list a little bit more.
I'll just say my top 10 really quick down the list. Starting at 10, I had Portal 2 at 10. I had Bioshock at 9. I had Skyrim at 8. I had The Last of Us at 7. And then, did I screw this up? Why do I have, I'm looking at the one I emailed them, and then I changed it. And then I had Super Mario World at 6, And then I had Galaxy at 5. Then The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt, Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time, mm-hmm. Mass Effect 2, Super Mario 3.
Well, you see, you had a handful. You had like three in there. I think. Yeah. Okay.
You guys have some solid lists. One big one that points out to me, and Brad, I think you might see this as well. Interesting, both of you and this list, no Grand Theft Auto in the top 10 here. Very surprising to me after all of the sales, the cultural impact of what Grand Theft Auto, the series and the franchise has had, not in the top 10. Jeff, why do you think that?
I think it's a combination of factors. I think that Red Dead Redemption is the more prestige one, so it's easier to go with that. And I think that for a lot of people, Grand Theft Auto feels like the normie pick. And when you're voting and stuff, you kind of want to be a little bit novel. You want to be
interesting.
I have cool picks. Everyone's going to pick Grand Theft Auto. And then it turns out everyone's thinking that same way. So they don't put Grand Theft Auto in there. Yeah.
Yeah. Baird has brought it up. Grand Theft Auto 5 sitting at, what is that, Baird? 48 right there? 48. And of course, Red Dead from, of course, Rockstar is at 15, Red Dead Redemption 2. So surprising to me that a Rockstar title did not make the top 10. I thought for sure Grand Theft Auto or Red Dead, as you brought up, Jeff, would be gracing that top 10. But that's a standout to me. I see Disco Elysium at number 12. That's very interesting. I like that poll. I know a lot of people talk about that on the critical side. I want to know how big that is globally and worldwide.
No, yeah, you know, it's definitely a critical darling. It's a favorite of critics and people who are very, it's like a very popular PC RPG, but it's not, and I know it's on consoles now, but yeah, you know, it's not Grand Theft Auto, that's for sure. Yeah.
Of course, on the Xbox side, shout out Halo Combat Evolved getting in at 21. So you get some Xbox love there in the, you know, we'll call it the top 20s right there, kind of gracing the list. That's nice. Yeah, I'm being generous, Bear, with 21 out of the top 20. We need a win here. We need a win. Paris, any standouts for you? Mm-hmm. A lot.
Too many. So the fact that like any of the games that you love are on here, I think is like a cool thing. Like,
right, they have to be in a significant number of people's top 10 games of all time to get anywhere on this list.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Way too many games. So these are like the top. This is like 0.001% of games that are existing, right? And like my favorite game of all time is in the 60s, I think. And I'm happy with that. It's a great game.
Yeah, I was like very happy to see Hitman World of Assassination on there at 89, like being on there at all. And Return of the Obra Dinn, one that I'm like, actually, I probably should have put that higher, 97. And it's like, oh, I think a lot of people are going to read this list. They're going to get, all right, I'll start from the top. And like, oh, I guess I heard of Age of Empires. Rez, I guess maybe I don't know that. Return of the Obra Dinn, what is this monochromatic bullshit? It's like, no, that's actually one of the best games of all time. I'm really glad that a game like that is going to pop immediately at people. And like, maybe they'll go check it out because it deserves it.
You know what's the most surprising to me is actually 100, Knights of the Old Republic. I was surprised it was that low. I thought it would have been probably in the top 30 somewhere. At least it would be for me.
I think it's the popular reassessment of like the combat a lot of people complain about. I don't think there's any problems. I think it's still one of the best games ever. But
yeah, and that's funny. I was having a conversation with some friends the other day, kind of talking because we were talking about remakes and remasters, when to do them and when not to do them. And a friend of mine made a great point that for games like that came out in the 90s or the early 2000s, it definitely makes sense to remake those games for a modern audience because you're going to go back and play. If you go back and play them in the state when we played them, we thought they were amazing. But you go play them now, you're like, oh, this is horrible. This mechanic here, this there. But at that time, they were amazing for what they were. I think two great examples of that is go back and play GoldenEye now, which we can actually do, you know, on Xbox. Mm-hmm. Does not hold up. But in that moment, it was amazing. Absolutely. Or go back and play Super Mario 64. At that time, I thought that was so revolutionary, but it doesn't necessarily
hold up. Paris, you better watch your damn mouth.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Another big one, of course, people will look and circle Fortnite at 81. Of course, Fortnite, as Barrett so well put, like that's a big number to get into, but Fortnite on the list. But surprising, Fortnite 81, right? I think there's a case to be made now in today's gamer age, right? How important and influential Fortnite is.
Multiplayer
right?
games struggle on these higher things. Yeah,
exactly.
Competitive multiplayer games. Like, I mean, Street Fighter 2 is pretty high, but there's like, you know, okay. The worst, like StarCraft, is StarCraft 2 even on here? Like
No, it's not. I have not seen StarCraft.
Yeah, that's right. That's one, or StarCraft, or the original one. Either one would have been like, okay, that probably should have been on there. And those kinds of games just kind of are going to get a little bit of the shaft on the list like this. Is there anything on the list, you guys, that you think is, that shouldn't be on there? I'm like, Shinmue at 84, get the hell out of here with that nonsense. What are you smoking?
Is there anything weird to me that shouldn't be on the list? You know what? I've been pretty pleased with seeing the list. It is interesting. Barrett, you asked me, like, Mike, were you invited onto this? And Barrett, and I think a lot of the Kind of Funny audience, and Jeff, you said so well with Giant Bomb of, like, all of our voices come together and you get to see the highlight of this incredible cast and what everybody's different personalities and games like, right? Like, if you ask me for my top 10, it is going to actually be very multiplayer centric, right? I am known here at Kind of Funny for more of the multiplayer guys. So I would be adding a lot more multiplayer centric games to the list for me. So I'm actually very different from what you see here with a lot of single player focused games for sure.
Definitely.
Oh, I have one.
Okay.
Oh yeah. Here it is.
Any Metal Gear Solid game except the first one.
Oh, wow. Okay. Oh, I think we were doing hot takes.
That's a very hot take.
All right.
Okay. No, and it's just a running joke. Like, I even tweeted that a couple when the rumors about the three coming, Metal Gear Solid 3, the remake coming out. I'd said that on Twitter and everybody got mad at me because I have a personal issue with, like, I love Metal Gear Solid, the first one. But what the okie doke they did in 2, I was so mad.
The entire time. Hold on to that. Hell yeah, I love that.
Because I kept waiting. I go, okay, we're gonna play Snake again. That's wait, the credits just rolled. What? And I've never forgiven Kojima ever since.
I don't blame you. Have you played?
No, I have not. Because I am dead serious when I say I was so mad after 2, I've never played a Metal Gear game since. And I know I need to play it. Yes. Yes, I will. I 100% will.
Oh, Jeff, you think it's real? This is for real? For real?
Oh, it's real. Yeah.
There's so much smoke. It's real. It's real.
So,
Sure. Whether or not it's real, like,
doesn't guarantee that it is. Yeah.
One that, like, I'm like not poo-poo, no, they shouldn't be on the top 100, but one that I was just surprised by was Firewatch from 2016. Because of all the walking.
Really, I liked that
game. Hit for me hard.
I like this one. This one, seeing it on the list, I was like, "Oh, nice job!" Like, that's a good game right there. I like that.
Yep, I'm with you. That game completely worked on me as intended. Where it was like, you are supposed to begin going down these red herring wrong paths of thinking of there is something mystical or magical or supernatural happening here. And then the mundanity of what is actually going on and having to have that realization of there are just real human people having real human issues, and it's ugly and it's sad. And the game does such a good job of putting you in one mindset, and then the stark contrast of what's really going on is so effective, so powerful that it's really stuck with me.
Also, I apologize. I haven't talked too much on this episode, but my mic has been muted this entire fucking
No!
Let's fucking go!
I've only talked a couple of times. It's not a big deal.
That's how that one went. Well, of course.
Can you do an AI version of Barrett and put an AI Barrett voice in there? Let's go.
Yeah,
that is the GQ Top 100 Greatest Games of All Time. Go check it out. Of course, in the comments down below, let's get you activated, XCast fans out there. Give us your top 10s. Give us the games, if you look at the list, that stuck out to you and you say what? Why is that on the list or why is that not on the list? But let's keep it going because I got a couple smaller pieces of news that I want to talk about with you guys. Mortal Kombat 1 was announced this week. Very exciting. I know the fighting game community is jazzed up for the big three that we know about coming into the space this year, which is Mortal Kombat 1, now announced, coming in September, September 19th on next-gen consoles and Nintendo Switch. Then also Street Fighter 6 right around the corner, June 2nd. And then Tekken 8, we are still waiting on a date for, by everything that I can find. So I want to get a touch on it because I know, Paris, we learned a valuable lesson about the fighting games and, of course, Xbox fans when it comes to Killer Instinct 2. But I want to know what your thoughts on this big three right now. What game are you looking forward to the most? And what game you think is really going to shine out of these three?
For me, it's Street Fighter. Yeah, for me,
it's Street Fighter 6.
Yeah, for me, it's Street Fighter 6.
Okay.
Because that's what I'm the biggest fan of. Well, look, you know, I'm not going to say Killer Instinct because God forbid if I ever say something about that game again. But no, Street Fighter VI for sure. And maybe it's just because I've had some hands on with it already, you know, going back to last year. I'm really liking the direction that it's going. I'm not the biggest fighting fan in the world, but I do appreciate them all. And obviously this Mortal Kombat announcement looks exciting. So I'm definitely interested to see more about that as well. But for right now, Street Fighter VI.
Jeff Grubb, you chimed in with a little Street Fighter VI as well. Is that where you're going?
Yeah, I think if I have to like only give one, it is Street Fighter VI. But I think all three games serve different purposes in like, I am like ready to engage with them on their own terms. I do think Street Fighter VI is going to be the one that I will try to get good at, right? Like I haven't engaged with a fighting game in that way since Street Fighter II, like on the Super Nintendo. Like that's when I was like really into fighting games. So I'm ready to change that. I want to get back into fighting games. It's time. Like clearly the tide is rising on this genre and I want to catch the wave. Like I want to be there with everyone else. I don't want to get left behind. But Mortal Kombat's going to have that single player campaign, the story that is actually so well done that I my plan is to go replay because I've only played a little bit of 9. So I'm going to go 9, 10, 11, and then I'm going to be right there ready, waiting for 1 that kind of reboots that storyline, but still definitely is continuing it. So like I want to get in on that. And then Tekken, I think, is just it's always been a really fun series. Yeah. I've always just really had fun hopping in, enjoying that arcadey style of just beating people up. So I'm ready for all three, but Street Fighter VI is the one. They just really figured some stuff out with that, where everything in that game is just fun to do so far from what we've played, where even like just going through the menus, they like paid a lot of attention to make sure the UX was satisfying to use. And it's like, oh, mm-hmm. they're doing the attention to detail thing here where every little thing matters. You know, they're going to carry that into the gameplay. And so far from what we played, they clearly have.
Sweet. I'm actually on the opposite side from you guys. I am a Mortal Kombat guy, so I'm very jazzed up about Mortal Kombat. I will give a lot of props to Street Fighter. It's got me very interested. I like the flashy colors. I like what they're doing with the gameplay and, of course, the world tour, being able to create your avatar and go around. I think it's going to be a ton of fun. And from what we've seen from Blessing sharing his previews, he's jazzed up about it.
Yeah.
But for me, I'm a Mortal Kombat guy. I love that world. I love the gore. I like the intensity and the character roster that you have over there. So I'm really excited for what Ed Boon and the team have created for us, right? And it's jazzed up to see that we get a lot of fighting games this year and everybody's going to be having a good time selecting their favorites and playing it. So that's pretty dope stuff. Paris, keeping it moving. I got another cool one for you because IGN reports that EA is going to pay those kids. NCAA football is going down, Paris, and they're paying those kids finally, which is really exciting. I'll just take it right from Christina Alexander over on IGN. She writes, EA Sports has announced that the collegiate title, EA Sports College Football, will pay players to lend their likeness in the game if they opt in to do so. According to a report from ESPN, the publisher is collaborating with One Team Partners, a firm that also works with the NFL and MLS Players Association, to, quote, facilitate collegiate athlete names and likenesses into the game, which is set to debut next summer. The offer extended to all eligible players within the Division I football subdivision. Paris? They did it. One step closer to making a good one. What do you think about that?
What a world we're in now. Who the heck would have thought this 20 years ago?
So that different.
We would be at this point where we're getting not only are we getting NCAA football back, but we're to the point where these kids are getting paid. They're getting compensated. Their likenesses, you know, is being used in these games. I'm excited for it. Really looking forward to it. This might be the thing to pull me back in because I've been on the sidelines when it comes to playing like Madden and things like that online, but this might be the thing that pulled me back in. Go Noles.
Jeff Grubb, I'm telling you, when you ask me for my top 10, NCAA football is going to be in it. Okay.
Oh, because that's awesome.
NCAA football is that game. And I love, of course, the fight songs. I love having such a wide. Florida Gators, of course.
Hell yeah. Gators, man, that baby. Game was so like my team Paris, possible. Yeah,
that's my team right there. I mean, it was like peak Gator situation with Tim Tebow and me being like high school through Tebow mania. So it was like, oh yeah, this is perfect. I love that. But yeah, I've always loved the college stadiums, right? The idea of what they've done with home field advantage and getting all the places rocking on certain Friday and Saturday nights. Like I've loved NCAA football and dynasty mode. The idea of creating a player in NCAA and then carrying it over to Madden was such a cool idea back in the day when they did that. So for the kids to get paid to have player likenesses, so it's not quarterback 14 anymore.
Yes.
I love that, right? And so also little tip right there, Jeff, did you see that? They said we'll be out next summer That's pretty exciting stuff right there to me, Jeff.
Yep. I think I know they've been working on this. That team has been very – this is the team that does Madden. It's the team that does golf. They do one other project, I think, as well as this college football game. And what I've heard is they really don't want to do the thing they used to do, which is here's last year's Madden. It's called NCAA football now.
Yes.
They really don't want to do that, at least for this first one. I'm like, well, maybe for the first one, that's the one you should do that to make sure it's like all good. But okay, all right, whatever, go for it. That team is spread pretty thin. So I'm like, I'm still worried. But hey, next year, next summer, that gives them some time. Let's give them some time and let them see what they can cook. I will say that the paying the athletes is good. The number that's been rumored is about $500 per player. That's not a lot, but it's better than nothing. It's so weird to like try to figure out like what is fair in this situation because. Yeah. If you are a second string offensive lineman that no one knows, like your value on the open market for an NIL contract is zero. It is. So $500 for you is just awesome. It's got to be awesome. Like that's $500 you didn't have. If you are one of the big names, though, I would imagine you're going to have the option to say no and negotiate your own contract for the real. And that's going to be, I think a lot of these guys are going to do that and probably get paid a little bit more. Now, EA did say the word equitable. Which I think is code for we're going to give everyone $500, take it or leave it, but we'll see what happens. I don't know. This podcast has a worldwide audience, and if you think that we're crazy for caring this much about college sports, you're right. We are. it's absolutely crazy, our culture on college sports, but I can't help it. I grew up in Michigan. I'm a huge Wolverines fan. Oh, so
yes, I love that. It is what it is. The big house, baby.
Yeah, that's right. Come to the big house.
That's the exciting part. It's like you said, Jeff, if that is the true dollar amount, of course, that is great, right? The kids get to be in the video game, which I'm sure in my generation, that was the biggest dream come true, right?
Yeah.
The idea of you. I had one friend who made it into D1 football, and we had him. He was D end 81, right? And we were like, oh my God, I'm playing as Will. This is amazing, right? But the idea of like getting your name and likenesses in the game is a big dream come true, I'm sure. And yeah, I'm sure a lot of players will probably negotiate for larger, but at the same time, how dope is it going to be? Maybe their NIL deals go for larger sponsorships come out of, hey, this guy over at Mid Tennessee State is the best player in NCAA football 2024. His deals are going to go through the roof, right? Like all of a sudden social media is going to grab onto kids at some random school and they're going to sign big deals somewhere with cool.
Absolutely.
I hope so.
Yeah, because you have to think of, and he'll probably come out by the time the game is coming out, so he won't be in it. But think of like a Caleb Williams at USC. You're paying him a lot to be able to use his likeness in the game, or he just will refuse and he'll be QB 13 because that's going to be a popular team and a popular player that people are going to want to use in the game. So you think even just last year, like if Bryce Young would have been in it, right, from Alabama, oh, he would have got paid, you know, as an example. Oh, yeah. So yeah, it's going to be huge. And look, and I know this isn't football. Let's say if they did an NCAA basketball, imagine Bronny,
yeah.
Oh my God, people like that, they're going to get paid, which is good. These kids should get paid. It's a billion-dollar business, and you know they get robbed.
And one of the things that what's happened a lot with these NIL deals is there's like one star, and they're like they try to spread the love. They're like, hey, yeah, you can get me in there and pay me, absolutely. You got to like spread a little sugar on my teammates here.
Exactly.
And I hope that becomes sort of like an unofficial unionization. You're already on a team, like watch out for your teammates, of course. Mm-hmm. And like, I think that's hopefully how it'll play out in a lot of these cases where, I'm the star QB. I'm a star QB because my offensive line. Get them NIL deals, please. I want them all on the cover with me. Like that stuff could happen.
There you go. That's
smart. It's gonna be exciting stuff. I cannot wait for that. Next summer is also very exciting, but I have something that's happening right now. And I'm excited to share that for the end of the show. Xbox gamers, you have some good news because announced last week, maybe 2 weeks now, we took a week off, Seagate Storage expansion cards have received a permanent price decrease, which is very, very nice. Of course, one of the biggest complaints on the Xbox side of things when it comes to hardware and just the consoles itself has been that storage expansion card being way too pricey and all of us waiting for competition, whether it be from different teams creating that, but most importantly, looking at what they offered us with Seagate right off the bat. It was too expensive. People are now pumped up. I believe the prices go like this. 512 is now $89. 1 terabyte is $149 and 2 terabytes, $279. That is down from $109, $199 and $359. So, still kind of pricey, but a positive with it going down. Jeff Grubb, I have some bad news. Okay.
Oh,
of course. You know me. I love swiping the card. Yep. And before my birthday, before the Phil Spencer interview, I really wanted a storage expansion card.
Oh,
I was
no.
like, it's finally time. I'm going to crack. I'm going to buy one.
How'd you do it?
And the team here was like, Mike, don't buy that. Just ask them to send it to you or wait for it to go on sale. I immediately said, no, I need it in my hands now. I proceeded to go to Best Buy. I spent $200 on a 1 terabyte hard drive. And the next day, they announced that it was going down in price.
What happened? What happened when you don't listen to us?
That's on me, but I am happy to report that I am in love with the storage expansion card.
Yeah, it's nice, huh?
It's so much smaller than I ever said. I don't know if you guys, I think you both have one, I'm sure.
Yeah,
but this is the
I
first
cracked
time
mine open before it even relaunched. I like did a video where I like took it apart and looked inside what was in
awesome.
There and stuff. Yeah.
It is smaller than I thought. It's tiny. It's cool. It's rad. It reminds me of the PS2 days when I used to take memory cards all around and shove them in. This is dope. I really like this piece of tech. Not for the price, though. Remember that? Not pleased with the price.
It is. Hey, listen, you did this for us. You went out there and bought it, and they're like, all right, we got him. We got him. But ladies and gentlemen, his wallet has been compromised to a permanent end. We can now lower the price.
Yes.
So thank you, actually. I really appreciate it.
I had that happen. Of course, positive news for all you Xbox gamers out there. But this will end our show with my gaming daddy, Jeff Grubb, the coolest dude on the internet. Jeff Grubb, where can everybody find you? Where can they hang out and get more of you? Because I always want more Jeff Grubb in my life. Where can the best friends find you and hang out with you?
Yeah, I got my Discord, discord.gg/GameS. We got a great community over there. You can kind of keep track of my stuff that I do over there as well. And then Giant Bomb, we're doing a playthrough of Four Swords Adventures that I am just in love with. That is a magical game to play. It's one I never could get running because who had 4 Game Boy Advances? And turns out we do, wink, on our computers, wink. And it's been a lot of fun to play it that way. But it's also a complete nightmare because that's a game where you have to work together. And it's a game that gives you every opportunity to mess with everyone else you're playing with. And so it's like most of the time, it's like having kids. I have to go run after Dan Reichert, pick him up, carry him to where we're supposed to be. And he's trying to get it, like wiggle out of my hands and run and go hit a chicken so they all attack us. It's a nightmare, but it's a really good time to watch. I'm really happy with what we've done with that. So check that out. We did a new episode of that this week. So that's on giantbomb.com.
That's dope, Jeff Grubb. Well, thanks for keeping it with me and Paris. Of course, Paris, like I said, next 2 weeks, jam-packed. We got Ryan McCaffrey coming in. We got Andrea Renee right before Summer Games Fest. So, Jeff Grubb, you've been the kickoff to a fun summer start for us here on the XCast. So thank you to you for joining us. Paris, I can't wait to see you next week, but until then, it's time to say goodbye. What's your final words for all the XCast faithful out there?
This has been the worst technical issues I've had in my 2 years of doing that. That's my final word. No, I'm excited, obviously, to continue to do this podcast, get to see you in a couple weeks down here in Los Angeles for Summer Game Fest. And I cannot wait for the episode with Andrea Renee because I'm going to grill her about the bet that she is going to lose. And she knows. You guys will see in a couple weeks.
All right. Well, with that, we'll see you all next week. Thanks a lot, gamers, for hanging out with us. Until then, peace.